This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese for Greg Shanley. Having trouble sleeping? It's easy for a lot of people, difficult for a lot of people. Maybe it's because sleep is a dynamic process during which the brain is very active. Scientists and medical professionals still have much to learn about this complicated physiological phenomenon, and let's hope they are learning quickly, as at least 40 million people in the U.S. suffer from chronic long-term sleep disorders, and an additional 20 million experience occasional sleep problems. This hour, our sleep doctor is in, Dr. Eric Dykin, head of the Sleep Disorders Clinic at the University of Iowa. He'll take your calls and answer your emails this hour, right after the news from Iowa Public Radio and National Public Radio. And this is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese, filling in for Greg Shanley, and it's our sleep day on Talk of Iowa with Dr. Mark Dykin, director of the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa. Dr. Dykin, welcome back.
Welcome, Mr. Reese. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you here, and as always, this hour is very popular with listeners, and we are expecting a lot of calls and a lot of emails, so you might as well get to the phone, and we'll get you on the air as soon as we can. 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dr. Dykin, yesterday NPR reporting that there is an ingredient that's being left out of our food by manufacturers. I believe it's called tryptophan, but I could be wrong about that, and it would help a lot of us sleep better. Is that your understanding?
Well, tryptophan, you know, they always, grandma said, drink warm milk before going to sleep, et cetera. There's tryptophan in warm milk. So it's very holistic, you know, very naturalistic. But there are some potential side effects with warm milk. My wife, who is from China, says you know, she can't drink milk. It makes her sick. And she says, I'm the aberration, because genetically, most adults no longer can tolerate milk that they did when they were infants. And I'm able to tolerate it, so it works really well for me. But for most adults, they don't handle the warm milk just in and of itself with gastric problems. And in addition, they used to actually put it in a pill form, tryptophan. But the vehicle, the encasing, the tablet form that they put it in actually caused this horrific inflammation of the muscles that could even kill you. I saw a couple patients with that years and years ago. So there may be some reasons why they keep some of these things in special forms, and mother's milk is probably the best.
Why don't they change the packaging? I remember when that was for sale. It was just in pill form, right, as you said.
Yeah.
So why don't they change the packaging and bring it back?
Well, I think they might when people's memories get low for it. There's a lot of medications that we use for sleepiness that in the old days, some of my older patients will say they considered dope. And whether it's good for them, it's in regard to an intrinsic sleepiness problem, because the public image was so hurt. It takes a little bit of while to forget about those things.
We already have an email in, and we might as well get right to listener calls and emails. This is from Jean, and she says, recently there was an article in the Des Moines Register regarding oral devices for sleep apnea. The device replaces the CPAP machine. Would Dr. Dykin comment on these devices and their effectiveness in preventing sleep apnea?
Oh, it's they're great oral devices. They generally pull the jaw forward in patients that have small little itty bitty jaws. It sort of pushes on what we call the anterior airway space. And if you pull the jaw forward, it opens up the throat, but it most certainly doesn't replace the CPAP. In fact, it's recommended for moderate sleep apnea. So like if you stop breathing about 15 to a maximum of 30 times per hour, which is about moderate sleep apnea, there has been evidence it can reduce the number of apneas. But in general, it doesn't get rid of all of them. So it's usually a secondary therapy in people who can't tolerate continuous positive airway pressure, which is a small mass put over your face, delivers a gentle column of air that keeps your airway open from the tip of your nose down to your lungs. That's usually the best therapy overall, not in all cases. But in those people with little itty-bitty jaws and that who have claustrophobia, just can't tolerate CPAP. It's a wonderful therapy. In fact, I even sent Dr. Sullivan, I think, just came here, orthodontic specialist in those oral devices, and we do that here at the university, and we're real proud of it. It works for some people.
Mm. All right. Let's go to the phones, and we are going first to Jonathan, who's calling in from Solon. And hi, Jonathan. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. I have an 8-year-old and 10-year-old who recently began some early morning activities before school, and no matter what we try to do, we can't get them to go to bed and get to sleep any earlier, and no matter what time they have to wake up in the morning. So maybe you have some suggestions about how to change the sleep schedule of 8- and 10-year-olds so they're not chronically tired.
Well, you know, that's sort of fighting Mother Nature in some regards. Young children, especially adolescents, are what we called intrinsically, naturally delayed phased, which means compared to a middle-aged adult who likes to go to bed at 9 to 10, their natural circadian rhythm, their biologic clock at that age is set a few hours later. So, you know, when adolescents and kids say, yeah, I want to stay up later, that's because they're intrinsically wired to stay up later. And as such, they're intrinsically wired to sleep in a bit earlier. Now, Mary Carskadon and, I'm blanking on his name, but she is a world-famous sleep expert. And she experimented with young kids in certain teaching school environments, and she put them on a different schedule where they were able to sleep later at night, and as such slept later in the morning, went to school later, and there was some evidence in these kids that there were less accidents, maybe even better learning. So it's really difficult to fight Mother Nature. But if you're going to try to do it, one of the best things to do is make sure it's regular awakening time, regular bedtime, 7 days a week. So don't fall back on the weekend and try to make up for that loss. It takes your body a while to adjust to that jet lag, and if you screw it up on the weekend, you're starting all over. And it takes a full week almost to adjust to that.
Jonathan, did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Do you have any suggestions for using melatonin? I mean, you mentioned tryptophan in warm milk, but
yeah.
Anything besides allowing them to go to bed at 11 o'clock and wake up 10 minutes before school starts?
Melatonin has caused – it's a hormone. You know, it's a synthetic hormone, and it's actually a restricted substance in Canada. So you bring in melatonin over there, they'll watch you. Here, it's actually – I think it's rated as a food additive. My wife had written a chapter about melatonin many years ago because in blind children, people with head injuries where they lose the normal biologic clock, the use of melatonin, which is in your body and raises when the sun goes down to make you naturally sleepy, is a great thing. But the additive has some side effects, and it can have gonadal changes, hormonal changes, and oftentimes the bioavailability in the United States, because it's a food additive, which means it's cheap as dirt to get, it's not really restricted. It's not really watched very closely. I had a buddy who dealt with children with brain injuries, and they tried to – who had bad insomnia, and they tried to utilize melatonin. He looked at a variety of different samples of melatonin that were out there on the market, and he saw the bioavailability, which means, you know, how much you can actually get into your system, was almost 10 times the normal physiologic dose in some formulations to 0% in others. So got to be prepared for side effect, and you know, when you start putting drugs in your kids, it just for me, I have never prescribed a drug for myself, for my children, and between you and me, it's not to be recommended.
Jonathan, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. When you buy melatonin, and I've used it before.
Yeah,
I mean, you don't really know what you're getting because it is a food additive. It's not regulated. How do you know if it's the right formulation, if it's the right quantity, the right amount,
I think there's one formulation out there. I think it's Remeltian, which is a synthetic, you know, kind of a hormone that is an accepted formulation, but it's melatonin-like, and as such, probably much more expensive than melatonin. But I don't want to poo-poo it for right now. I believe,
especially in brain-injured kids. So we do a lot of research on kids with developmental disabilities where they've injured their normal biologic clock, or elderly patients with dementing illnesses where they injure their normal biologic clock. It's replacing what they may be missing. But I think getting that formulation, the appropriate dose for the appropriate individual, is where we're at right now. So we want to be cautious because there's so many different formulations. But the interesting economic, pharmacoeconomic element in the United States is it's so dirt cheap. Mm-hmm. With what they have now, no one's going to make any money making a better formulation of it. So
where should we go to get it? Should we go to a natural food co-op? Should we go to Walgreens? Or?
Well, I talked to your doctor about the formulation that is accepted if you really need it. One of the problems we have, though, the number one problem, sleep disorder in the United States, is good sleep hygiene. We are wired to need, most of us, 7 to 9 hours of sleep at night. I'll bet you didn't get it last night. I know I didn't get it last night, but then we start popping pills. Mm. And when, you know, I do the same thing with my doctor. Doctor, give me a pill. Let me fix it. I got to get back to work. But those pills have side effect. And I'm sorry, I'm holistic. If I can go by Mother Nature, I'd like to do it. But how often does my job, your job, and society, with the economic problems, the concerns that we have, the stresses, how often do we get that 7 to 9 hours? That's what we need to concentrate on. How do we get good sleep hygiene? And we can talk about that later.
Yeah, let's do that. 866-780-9100. Dr. Eric Daikin, professor of neurology at the University of Iowa and director of the Sleep Disorders Center. Our email is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Robert is calling from Mount Vernon. Hello, Robert.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
My question is about REM sleep and memory. I understand there's a relationship, and I also understand, I don't know if it's true, that the quantity and quality of REM sleep as we age, say in our 60s, 70s, and 80s, decreases.
Well,
And I'm wondering if there should be, if those things are true, should there be ways of improving REM sleep in older people?
Well, it's interesting. A good friend of mine, Dr. Ashkenazi from Israel, many years ago, he did this simple motor task. He did a lot of things with it, but in a nutshell, he taught these people how to do this, you know, building a block, let's say. He built a little castle out of blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And the next night, he would deprive, he followed their brain waves, and as soon as they were getting ready to go into REM sleep, he'd wake them up.
Uh-huh.
And then he let them go back to sleep. But every time they hit REM sleep, he disrupted, so they got no REM sleep. So they went back to that same task the next day that they spent all day learning, and it was as though they never, ever saw it before.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't encode. And many of the cognitive experts believe that you take these daytime elements of learning and then review them at night, and if you don't get REM sleep, that's where you review it. You may forget it.
Gentlemen, why don't we hold on here for a second, okay? Robert, we'll get back to you after the break.
And
it's
we'll
a
plan.
It's a plan, so hold on. We'll take a quick break on Talk of Iowa and be back in a minute. And this is Talk of Iowa for this Tuesday. I'm Dennis Reese, filling in today for Greg Shanley. We're back with our sleep doctor, Dr. Eric Daikin, from the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa, 866-780-9100. And we were talking before the break with Robert from Mount Vernon about REM sleep. And I don't know if you finished answering his question, Dr. Dyke.
Oh, yeah. Didn't really address the one about losing it as we get older. Actually, what we lose classically, and everybody's a bit different, but is the deep delta sleep we call non-REM or N3 sleep. REM sleep, rapid eye movement, dreaming, or paralyzed sleep is generally preserved fairly well into our older age. And in fact, and it's not fair, bothers me a little bit, but we often consider 50 years as elderly in sleep medicine because we start losing cells in that biologic clock, simple way of looking at it. And we do have changes in our sleep patterns. And one of the classic is the loss of deep delta sleep. And there's some controversy about that. But as we get older, the way to compensate for that deep delta sleep, which many people believe is the most refreshing stage of sleep, you can do a lot of things that I alluded to earlier, referred to earlier, sleep hygiene. And what you can do is have generally good daytime habits, good exercise, good diet, and a routine bedtime from 7 to 9 hours of sleep, if that's what your biologic clock routinely has been your entire life, keeping that 7 days a week, just like Grandma told us to do. Now, the great thing about exercise is we know that if you do it 4 or 5 times for 30 minutes every week, that it can improve your morbidity, mortality, let you live longer in many cases. It also raises core body temperature, which tends to increase deep delta or refreshing sleep. Now, if you have no legs, you have difficulty with arthritis, you can't do big-time exercise, oftentimes a warm sauna bath can increase the core body temperature for 15 to 20 minutes. And psychologically, I like sauna. I like furo. I like that kind of a thing. It works for me, you know, settling down at night, getting a good routine, and then that positive attitude, the cognitive behavioral therapy, a stimulus control, all these neat terms that the psychologists who are experts in sleep hygiene talk about, make the bedroom inviting, make the night inviting. You just had your whirlpool. You're going to try to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep. You go to the bedroom, nothing but good thoughts there. Have a silly comic book. That's what I do. And a little bit of decaffeinated ginseng tea. Sit in that bed, relax, and read until your eyes are ready to drop. No bills, no worries, no concern. That's the sleep hygiene that we're looking for. And that kind of a practice, simplistic, holistic, is really what carries an awful lot of our patients, especially the ones with early dementia, where we start having insomnia, not sleeping well at night, and then daytime sleepiness, where we're sleepy at the wrong times and then we're wide awake at the wrong times. Giving good sleep hygiene practices a chance.
Robert, I hope that answered your question. Appreciate the call.
Really did, and thank you for talking to me, and I think it was a good discussion.
Well, great to hear you.
Thanks for calling in. It's funny that you're saying that good sleep hygiene is all stuff you do during the day, pretty much.
Oh, you plan your life out at 24 hours a day.
Right. Let's go next to Dave, who's calling from Des Moines. Hi, Dave.
Good morning, gentlemen. Doctor, I was a line driver at night. I would start at 7 p.m. in the evening and go to about 7 a.m. in the morning. Mm. And I did this only for a short time, for about 2 years. I just gained weight. I became pre-diabetic. I mean, I could see my life ebbing from me. And I don't do that anymore, but it's been about 2 years, and I'm kind of still feeling the effects. What can I do? Is this real? I mean, it was astounding for me because I'd never done anything like this in my life except when I was in the service, but then I was in my 20s. And the other thing, does deep meditation help with the delta wave frequencies in your mind? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, the first one, and I didn't quite believe it, but because I often use myself as my own reference. But there's an interesting phenomena that some of the scientists and researchers have seen with the students who don't sleep very well. Now, already you're fighting Mother Nature. You're going to bed at 7 p.m. and you're waking up at finishing work. You're going to work at 7 p.m. You're finishing work at 7 a.m. That's not when we're supposed to be awake. So already you're fighting the biologic clock. 12 hours during that period of time is a lot of time. And it's implying that the next day, because your body sleeps better at night, you're not getting good sleep either. So actually, over a 24-hour period that we referred to earlier, you're getting a lot less sleep than a normal 7 to 9 hours that Grandma told you. Students here at the University of Iowa, this is the most busy, socially, emotionally packed time of their life. They study all the time. And people did research on this, and they were watching an awful lot of the students are getting very little sleep. And while they're studying, they eat, their metabolism isn't really up, they're sitting and studying, and the weight tends to go way, way up. Now, for me, when I'm under stress and I'm studying hard, I get anorectic. I can't eat anything, and I lose weight, drink too much coffee, that kind of a thing. But this is supposed to be a phenomenon in young people who essentially are sleep deprived, and I think that's the phenomena that you're talking about in this regard. Now, in regard to the deep meditation, I think that's probably true. There's a lot of different things, and this is one part of cognitive behavioral therapies that are helping to teach good sleep hygiene. And whether it's transcendental meditation, whether it's meditating at your yoga class, at Taekwondo before the class, saying the team prayer at the end of the Super Bowl, these kind of cognitive relaxing, taking your mind into emptying out all the worries and the stresses really work. And that's what they call progressive relaxation therapy. You can call it transcendental meditation. But I think those do translate maybe indirectly, if not directly, to a deeper sleep. And as such, I guess you could push that envelope and say maybe deeper delta sleep. So my thought is if it works for you, do it.
866-780-9100. Dr. Daikin, what do you do about a large dog who sleeps in the bedroom with you and has a dream at about 3 o'clock every morning where she's, you know, barking and making noises and scratching and...
Well, that's what dogs do. And my thought is, yeah. And it's interesting. A lot of the sleep research, and God bless him, I love my uncle, but when my cat died, I cried more than when my uncle died. So I appreciate the life of a dog. We have a dog. We have a cat. We have a fish called Croak. They're very important, and that quality of life is right up there. But that's what dogs do. And dogs, I'm a little hesitant to say, a lot of the early research on the brain sleep mechanisms was done on cat and dogs. Mm. And they would sacrifice these animals, and it makes me cry. I didn't do it. Mm. But that's what dogs and cats do normally. And we call it oneric. Actually, Anna Freud termed a lot of these things. She did a lot of work on sleep medicine, Freud's daughter. And it's an oneric behavior, an isomorphism. And what they do, pretty cool term, what they do is they act out what they're dreaming. And you can watch them. And they start looking like, look, Lassie's eyes are moving. That's rapid eye movement, dreaming, paralyzed sleep. And they'll jerk all over. They look like they're chasing. That dog needs that. And as the first caller said, maybe that dog needs it for good memory, for good health, and you don't want to interrupt that dog's deep REM sleep.
So you shouldn't throw a pillow at her.
No.
Oh, okay.
And my thought is maybe that dog deserves to stay in the bedroom and you need to sleep out in the kennel. If you love your dog, you'll do that.
Okay.
Now, you know, and we talked about this before. Sometimes it's tough to sleep with your bed partner. And my thought is I'd let the dog, you know, let sleeping dogs lie.
Yeah, I think she deserves her dream, I have to admit. David is calling in from Dubuque. Hi, David.
Oh, good morning, doctor. I have a question for which there may not be an answer, but I am 64 years old. I suffer from restless leg syndrome as well as a moderate sleep apnea. I take Mirapac 1.5 milligrams daily.
Mm-hmm.
My biological clock, ever since I retired from work, I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know why, but I do. I'm rather bored of people in the evening that when we go out to dinner, by 7 o'clock at night, I'm ready to fall asleep. Is there anything that will counteract the effects of the Mirapac on my, which relaxes you, relaxes my legs, that I can do to be more of a social life in the evening when friends are around?
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with the Mirapac. It could, but my thought is, you know, that one guy who called in a little earlier and he has the sons, he's trying to get up earlier. He's fighting Mother Nature to some extent because kids, especially adolescents, are what we call phase delayed, typical to the middle age, you know, 20, 30, 40-year-old adult. That means they stay up later and they wake up later. We're, over age of 50, more phase advanced, and our normal biologic clock changes where we often will go to sleep earlier and as such wake up earlier. And for people like me, I love it because I get a lot of quiet work done at 4.
We have to take a break. Thanks for the call, David. Appreciate it very much. We'll take a break, hear the Environment Report and some weather information. Be back in 5 minutes on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Time is 10:36. Welcome back to Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese, today filling in for Greg Shanley. And we're talking to Dr. Eric Daikin, director of the Sleep Disorders Center at the University of Iowa. Lots of calls and emails, Dr. Daikin. Lots of concerns about sleep. Report that somewhere around 100 million Americans don't sleep well. It's an amazing widespread problem, to say the least. Here's an email from Becky. Can you speak to the use of diphenhydramine, and I hope I said that right, the sleep part of Tylenol PM as a sleep aid? Is it safe and effective? Are there side effects? What is a reasonable dosage? Should it be used for a prolonged period of time?
Benadryl. Yeah, it can make you drowsy. But I had a mentor, and if I made fun of him right now, he had a real deep, raspy voice because he smoked too much. But he told me, you know what Benadryl does for sleep? Not, and it started with an S, and it was a four-letter word. He didn't think it did much, and he was a hotshot sleep expert. It probably had more side effects than positive elements. And, you know, we've alluded to that. There's a lot of different things we've tried in this very busy, complicated world when we're all wired out to get to sleep. One of the number one things is anything over-the-counter or alcohol. And we know in the long run, for example, alcohol, it can get you to sleep, but it has a sympathetic or get-up-and-go effect on your fight-or-flight nervous system within a 3 to 4 hour period. And it's the tail of the dog that bit you kind of a thing. And then that's why people wake up and drink more and more, and you can get into real trouble with drugs. So, you know, I like sleep hygiene. I like the holistic stuff. But if you have to have a medicine, I think some of the best ones are what we call the GABAergic. GABA aminobutyric acid is this neurotransmitter that's part of the sleep switch in your biologic clock. And what I like about it is there are new medicines out there for people who just can't get to sleep for whatever reason that are safer and have less side effect. So a lot of things may work for you. And if it works for you and you're not having side effect, God bless you. Then utilize that. Every patient's an experiment unto themselves. But for the rest of us, there are better medicines, safer medicines availed.
Okay, very good. Let's go back to the phones. Dennis is calling from Sioux City. And good morning, Dennis.
Hey, good morning, Dennis and Dr. Eric.
Good to hear from you.
I was diagnosed with a sleep deprivation, not being able to go into REM sleep, and they prescribed norframin. Well, I didn't like all the side effects, so I got off it. And this morning I heard you talking about, it's a natural thing that you guys were just talking about.
Melatonin?
That's why I called. What was it?
Melatonin?
Melatonin, correct. But then you said that different capsules or pills or whatever had different percentages in there. And although I've been told that it's a natural derivative, that's what I want, it's something natural. But how do you make sure what your dosage needs to be and that you're getting the right dosage, and how do you measure all that?
Well, that's why it's a few years ago, all these members of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, as doctors, we were told to tell people, in general, we don't recommend them yet, because how do you know? You just don't know. And it's also funny, when you take anything, you know, look at that PDR, the physician's desk reference, and look under aspirin. Read that and you'll never take aspirin again. Aspirin's a good medicine. We use it for stroke and heart attack prevention. We use it for aches and pains. We don't give it to kids because it can kill them from Reye syndrome, and you can have a bleeding ulcer, and you can have blah, 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 blah. Even too much water in a dehydrated marathon runner who weighs 100 pounds can be dangerous. So whenever you take anything into your system 24 hours a day for wakefulness, for sleep, you got to think. And right now, when you take melatonin, you can have side effects. And if you want to have gonadal side effects, that's a potential. It's interesting. I might as well add this tangent. My mentor is Japanese, Dr. Tori Yamada. And he said the Japanese have the strain of chicken that has a kyphosis, you know, a crooked back. And that melatonin can correct that in those chickens. I mean, so you hear all sorts of things, but one of the things is buyer beware. We're really not sure of a good capsule, and even if we did, your individual response to that medicine, like aspirin or too much water, on any given day may be negative. So, you know, I'm all holistic for the most part, sleep hygiene all the way.
Is melatonin an animal byproduct then, doctor?
No, it's actually, you know, melatonin is a hormone. You have it. Okay. And it's sort of interesting.
Now I know, but do they get it from animals?
It's synthetic for the most part, as I understand it.
Okay. Dennis, did that answer your question?
Yeah, and I also drive a truck over the road. So getting that good quality sleep at night is next to impossible. You know, and I venture off on the more of the holistic side also, which aspirin is, you know, basically a root or a bark product.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. Aspirin is 99% good for you, but back on that sleep thing, and maybe I can give you my email address off the air, but how do you go about getting the right amount of enzymes from the brain to fire so the brain will let you go into that deep sleep?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of patients that are truck drivers, and you want to stay awake when you're driving, and I want you to stay awake when you're driving, especially if I'm beside you. You know, a lot of the great research from Stanford University, Dr. Bill Dement, work with truck drivers. And people got to understand, we have the safest truck drivers in the world because they've been beat on. They watch them on the road. They know that they can be dangerous because in that job, the most dangerous job in the world, if you fall asleep at the desk, you're dead. And so are anybody who gets in your way. A neurologist like me, they just push me to the side and get somebody else to take over my clinics. But not on the road, not when you're flying an airplane. I mean, so it's a very important job. And our truck drivers, as Dave Dingus from Pennsylvania has said, he's done a lot of studies on truck drivers. They're the safest because we watch them all the time. And what I would do for you, I would get yourself to your general practitioner. Now, first of all, that's the backbone of medicine in the United States, and say, this is what I'm interested in. Is there something you can help me out when I'm on these overnight hauls? Is there a combination of medicines and sleep hygiene that you think might be right for me? And if they're not sure, come to see one of the specialists, and they can adjust these things accordingly. Of course, I just said I want you to do good sleep hygiene, but there are some jobs that are done at night, and you're going to get crummy sleep during the day, and a combination of medicines, sleep hygiene, and even things like bright light therapy, fooling the system when you're on the job and having this bank of light that makes you think you're out in midday sun. There's a lot of different things that an expert can help you do so that you can be safe on the road.
Dennis, if you want to email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, I'll forward that to Dr. Dykin.
Yeah,
and
great. Thank you.
Yeah, drive safely. Thanks for the call. An email from Alyssa. And I'll have it here in a second. She says, please talk about Ambien and long-term side effects of using Ambien.
Okay. Now, Ambien is one of those GABAergic medicines. And in the front of the brain, and it's called the hypothalamus, there's this area called the preoptic nucleus. So I have to say all these words so you know that I know Latin and stuff and that I went to school to learn this stuff. But there's it's often called the sleep switch, and there's this neurotransmitter called gamma-aminobutyric acid, and this is what Ambien tries to mimic. It's essentially that kind of a chemical compound, what essentially is mother's milk. So some people who have had brain injury, for example, and we have a study going on this right now where you've injured the biologic clock, you can be left with permanent insomnia, and as such, this is a good medicine in cases where that chemical is missing because it replaces what naturally should be there the best it can. Now, Ambien, even though I just said that, there have been some studies that show that people who take this medicine, especially elderly, have less falls, less hip fractures, more normal sleep without changing the specific REM and non-REM patterns when you're taking the normal dose. But it's been all the rage in the news that it's been associated with the sleep eating syndrome, where people will get up in the middle of the night, not remember it, eat lots and lots of food, especially carbohydrates, but food they normally wouldn't eat, gain lots of weight, and sometimes like cigarette butts, sharp pieces of glass, you know, old ends of cigars, weird stuff, and not remember it at all. So it has been the basis of some lawsuit in that regard. So there might be potential side effects with anything. Now, in regard to any medicine that helps you sleep, if you really take enough of it, or too much of it, and your body's sensitive to it, you don't want your house to burn down that evening because you may not wake up and get out. So, again, Ambien is maybe one of the better new medicines that are actually FDA approved for the use in insomnia, people who can't sleep well.
Let's go back to the phone, and next is Nancy, who's calling from Fairfield. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. My question has to do with not falling asleep at night, because I don't have any problem falling asleep, but what about waking up at 3 in the morning and not being able to get back to sleep?
Well, you know, there's a, you know, actually, in the International Classification of Sleep Medicine, it was re-edited in 2005. We have 94, last time I sort of counted that up, specific differential diagnostic
problems that could possibly cause that scenario. You know, and as I've always said before, you got to be careful when you get some guy who thinks he's an expert or some gal who thinks she's the world's greatest on the radio and tells you something, and then all of a sudden you implement that and your life is rainbows and happiness. What medicine's based on is the full history and exam, and as I have implied, it may be due to one of those 94 different things. Some people can get to sleep, but some people wake up in the middle of the night for a variety of different reasons. Sometimes if they wake up toward the first third of the night and they're screaming and they're yelling, that could be a parasomnia, like a sleep terror. Sometimes if they wake up after the first 90 minutes or toward the end of night and they're gasping and they're not breathing well, that could be sleep maintenance insomnia secondary to apnea. Now, I have 92 other differentials I could add into that, but there are so many different things that could possibly do that. We know that sometimes people under certain degrees of stress, but who are very tired, can get right to sleep, but then they wake up. So, you know, I've mentioned three different things, and my thoughts are if you're concerned, I would see your primary care doc, the backbone of medicine in the United States, have them take a history from you, and have them look under the hood, make sure your physical exam's doing well, that your tonsils aren't touching to the point where you can't breathe, and then go from there and look at these 94 different possibilities and see if there's a solid diagnosis, then as such, a solid treatment.
Nancy,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. And Mark is next calling from Cedar Falls. Hi, Mark.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, great. This show is really great. I just wanted to, my question is kind of goes in the other direction. I don't have any problem sleeping whatsoever. I go to sleep within like 5 minutes of laying down. Whenever I'm committed to sleeping, I'm out. But I have a problem sleeping, falling asleep whenever I'm still, like anywhere, anytime I can't finish watching a movie with my wife. If I'm in a classroom or church or anywhere, long drives, I'm always almost dozing off. I'm fighting. Sometimes it's real torturesome. So I was wondering what you thought that was or what I could do.
Well, you know, it's sort of like my response to Nancy, but I'll go ahead and start out with simple sleep history. So what time do you go to bed most nights?
Probably 10 to 11.
10 to 11. And most nights it takes you about 5 minutes to fall asleep once your head hits the pillow?
Yep.
What time do you wake up most mornings to get dressed?
7.
About 7. So you're getting about maybe 8 hours, 9 hours of sleep every single night.
Uh-huh.
And you do that 7 nights a week?
It's not quite that regular, but yeah, I mean, throughout the week.
Okay. And how old are you right now?
35.
35. So, you know, and has it always been that way, or is this a new thing?
You know, I never really thought it was a problem. Actually, I was in the Navy, and during boot camp, you live on about 2 to 3 hours of sleep every day. Mm-hmm. It was really, you wouldn't think that's possible until you go through boot camp.
Yeah.
But ever since then, yeah, I just have a problem staying awake when I'm still, after a period of time of just not moving, you know, I can feel my body just relaxing, and next thing I know, I'm dozing off. It's almost like a chemical is taking over, you know.
Do you snore?
My wife says I do.
Do you ever wake up short of breath?
No.
You ever wake up with your own snoring?
No.
Okay, and you have a restful sleep. You don't have arousals at night to use the bathroom or heartburn?
Not very often, not that it's problematic, I mean, occasionally.
Well, the reason I bring it up, there's the big three that we often see in a person who's doing everything Grandma said and still tired. There's a problem called sleep apnea, where you can stop breathing. I got that. But it can just be subtle. Your wife might not even notice, but you have multiple micro arousals throughout the night, and as such, it's as though you didn't get much sleep at all. Even if you sleep 7, 9, 10 hours of sleep, dead tired. And even skinny little people can have sleep apnea. Number two, you could have problems like narcolepsy, but oftentimes what you do, you tell them a funny joke, they become paralyzed and fall down the stairs. And that's real obvious. And then sometimes we're just wired that way, and we call it central nervous system hypersomnolence. And if you don't think you have apnea or any other problem, get a sleep diary, keep a record over the next 1 or 2 weeks, try to get 8 to 9 hours of sleep. Just one more hour every single night, routine bedtime awakening time, and see if you feel better after a week. And it could be you're one of the people at the feet of the bell-shaped curve, and you might need just a little bit more sleep than Bob, Teddy, and me.
Because
there is a bell-shaped curve. Not everybody needs 9 hours of sleep. Some people get by on 4 or 5, but that's a rarity. Well, try that first, and if you still have a problem, give me a call back.
All right, thanks a lot.
All righty.
Okay, thank you, Mark, for the call from Cedar Falls. Your grandma had a lot of advice for you, didn't she?
She's a smart lady.
She really did.
Yeah.
It's all good advice, it seems like.
Absolutely.
We have an email from Susan. Is Trazodone safe to use?
Well, Trazodone is Desiril. And until recently, I think it still may be, it's the number one sold medication for insomnia. But it's not really an anti-insomnia drug. It's an antidepressant drug. But we use it sort of off-label, if you will, because we've used it for 5 million years. People feel comfortable with it, and they feel safe with it. Doctors do. Patients often get a good response. And sometimes the reason we have our insomnia, one of the number one reasons of insomnia in the United States, according to some studies, is stress and pressure and maybe depression. So it might work for you. Now, my number one reason for having insomnia is aches and pains because I try to keep up with my kids. Motrin, which is an anti-inflammatory medicine that all the athletes take, that's my anti-insomnia medicine. So it's not really the new brand of medicine that we've been talking about, the GABAergic, that the FDA is approving for insomnia. But in any given case, that might be the drug of choice. So it's used by a lot of people, but it's often used for that depressive component that a lot of us can have that can cause insomnia.
It's not addictive, is it?
I hate to say any medicine is not addictive. Coffee was really addictive to me. That took a week of headache to get over that one. My thought is I'd be hesitant to say. But if you need it, and that's why you follow with your general practitioner or a specialist, it may be mother's milk for you. And everybody is a different animal.
All right. Let's go and talk to Marilyn, who's calling from Iowa City. Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My I know 11-year-old who is taking meds for ADD. It affects her getting to sleep, and so she's given melatonin. And I'm wondering what I'd like to hear doctor's thoughts on this.
What is the melatonin working for her?
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, then I'm happy with it. My thought is, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of philosophies on the treatment of ADD. And my wife is a specialist with developmental disabilities and ADD and sleep in children.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if you go to the national meeting, there will always be people out front with the posters saying you're doping our children with this, this, and this. But if you've ever had a relative or a child with bad ADD, untreated, it can be so devastating. But as you've implied, there can be positive and negative elements with any medicine you might come up with. But if this combination of medicine is helping the behavior so this child can get a good education and someday run the White House, and if that addition of melatonin, even though I've said be careful with it, is working for this child, and that's what my wife has that interest in melatonin, because there's a lot of children with these problems. If that's working, don't mess with success. I think that sounds like the doc's doing a great job and the patient's doing a great job and the parents are doing a great job. And I wouldn't screw it up. First, do no harm.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, alrighty. Thank you, Marilyn. Let's try to get in at least one more, maybe two calls. Dan is calling from Davenport. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Oh, great. Sun's shining.
Ah.
My question is, so far everything I've heard answers a lot of questions, makes a lot of sense. It's basically my wife. She has a very hard time sleeping. She has a thyroid problem. She takes medication, but she's can't clear her mind. She'll be sitting there, her legs are twitching, and I don't know if your thyroid has anything to do with that or really, she's not a pill person, but I'm trying to find an answer.
Well, you know, you bring up three big things. She has a thyroid problem. Now, there are a lot of problems with having hypothyroid or hyperthyroid or having too much medicine, and everything's relative, isn't it? So if you're hypothyroid or hyperthyroid or having a medication effect, it can cause insomnia in and of itself. Thyroid disease is often associated with one of those disorders we talked about earlier, obstructive sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. In addition, as we get older, how old is she?
59.
Yeah. As we get older, it's not unusual, especially around 40, 45, to develop what we call periodic limb movements in sleep with a restless leg syndrome. And you can have them together by themselves. And what often happens, you start getting drowsy at night and your legs start to twitch. And that's what we call periodic limb movements. Sometimes it's associated with a relatively uncomfortable feeling of the legs, not exactly pain, but you just can't get your legs rested. And that's what we call restless leg syndrome. And there's some pretty good medications for that, because we found that disorder, the periodic limb movement, the leg problem, is often associated with a low level of dopamine. So we replace that chemical that may be missing. And it could be that she's just worried about having more health problems than hypothyroidism, that stress and pressure, and some of the other medicines we talked about, and including progressive relaxation therapy, good sleep hygiene may be helpful. But I'd sit down with your local doc. And, boy, that's a mouthful of things to present, and have them consider those things in addition to the other 94 things that may be screwing up her sleep.
Oh, well, that's helpful. It's really a problem. But, that sounds good.
We'd be happy to see her.
Okay, Dan, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate that. We're out of time, unfortunately. The hour went quickly, and we still have some callers. We apologize. Call back in a month. And when we have Dr. Eric Daikin back on Talk of Iowa. Dr. Daikin, thank you very, very much.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Talk of Iowa's, our student producer today is Christoph Mai. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dennis Reese for Greg Shanley. Thanks for listening. ¶¶